podcast to help you reach your positive potential. HRNradio.com.
It's a way of the dreamer. This is the radio show. We affirm the importance of dreams, coincidence, and imagination, things that are often dismissed by those around us, but are sources of juice and guidance and magic for everyday life. Our wonderful guest today is my dear friend Jane Carlton. We've been dreaming together for quite a while. She's one of our teachers of active dreaming. I want to call her a dream appraiser because she's also a gemologist and jewelry appraiser and does that very well. And when I think about it, Jane is one of those who appraises and brings into focus the gems that are waiting for us in our dreams and in dreamlike experiences. So she appraises and brings out the value of jewels and dreams, and isn't that a wonderful connection? She teaches in the Bay Area. She leads workshops. She hosts workshops for me in the San Francisco Bay Area, and she is a coach. So if you're looking for someone to help you privately with your dreams, Jane is a person to turn to. I don't do that anymore, but she does, and she's terrific. Jane, in a moment, we'll find out how people get in touch with you. Welcome.
Thank you. Good morning, Robert.
Well, good morning to you. It's for some people listening to us at any time of day, you know that. One of the things that we agreed we'd talk about this time is the adventures you've been having in Bali, which some of our listeners know well and some would like to go to. One of the things you've been doing on the island of Bali is you've been dreaming with children and helping children to unfold and enact and get some creative joy from their dreams. Talk to us about that.
Okay, thank you. Well, I was recently in Bali, and I led about a three-hour workshop at my friend Susan Allen and her husband Susia Wan school. They have a school called Yellow Coco Creative Nest, and it's a school for creativity. They do drama, they do art, they do all kinds of creative and artistic endeavors there. And so they invited some students who were age 8 to 12, and we had one 7-year-old who came who was a wonderful addition to the group. And what we found is that the age span worked perfectly. It didn't matter that there was a different age group to dream together. And so we had a lively 3-hour afternoon, and what happened was the students were never bored, and at the end of the 3 hours they were raring to keep going. They hadn't had enough. And would you like me to share with you basically the outline of what we did and how it
went? Yeah, we want to hear what you did. We want to hear what most appealed to the kids, and we want to hear what kind of lessons, stories, and drama excitement the kids brought to you.
Okay, great. Well, so we started with a question and answer. So we sat in a circle and just allowed space for the students to ask questions. And it was remarkable how many vibrant questions they had. They were really curious. They wanted to know about dreaming. And the students themselves, the school, they're a mix of students, kids from various countries, from America, Canada, Australia, South America, and then even some Balinese students sometimes come. I've done this several times at the school. And so this particular gathering, we had a nice multinational group of kids, and they asked questions. And one of the questions was, if dreams come from us, why don't we know what we're going to dream ahead of time? Mm-hmm. And I thought that was quite an astute question.
How did you play that question?
Well, you know, I said I don't know the answer to that, and that's part of the joy of this is that we don't always know the answer. So that means we get to explore and have adventures and see what happens. And I love
that. That's actually a good way of playing it. When I've taught children groups like that, I put the questions to them. I mean, I like the fact that you're getting the questions from them. I used to put the questions to them. I'd ask questions like, who in this group has dreamed the future? And almost every hand would go up. And who in this dream thinks that dreams are cool or interesting? Almost every hand would go up. And then the sad thing, and I'm talking about North America, I'm talking about the United States, the sad thing teaching kids let's say from 8 to 12 years old in some talented and gifted children's programs, was when I would ask, who shares the dream regularly with a family member? In one occasion, in three groups of 20 or so kids, only one kid in each group put their hand up. Only one kid in each group regularly shared dreams with adults. That was a girl sharing with her mother. So that's what I got when I was asking the kids questions. But don't let me interrupt you going on about the questions the kids had for you about dreaming.
I like that. And I did. I started with, what is a dream? So we had all kinds of answers from dreams are a movie, dreams are our psychology, dreams are adventures. So that definitely warmed them up. And when the student asked the question about, you know, why don't we know what we're going to dream ahead of time, I allowed the space for the students to dialogue amongst themselves. You know, what do you think? What do you think? And so they came up with all kinds of different ways to look at that. So, yes, the dialogue.
Did anybody come up with an answer to that that really interested you? Do you remember?
You know, I'm sorry, but I don't remember.
I mean, if I were talking one-on-one with a smart kid or the group of adults, I would say, well, it's an interesting question, but maybe the answer is that we don't make up our own dreams. I mean, yes, we have dream producers. Yes, part of ourselves is active in dreaming, but I might use the word transpersonal. Dreams are transpersonal as well as personal. Our dream producers, if we have them, are not simply a part of ourselves, but maybe a part of our larger self, etc. And we might get the whole idea of the collective unconscious and so on. I wouldn't do that with a group of kids like this, but it would be interesting if they came up with an answer which you know, might shift the normal, somewhat reductionist adult perspective. Go on with the practice and the play. I mean, the talk is interesting enough. Did you do theater? Did you do movement? Did you do creative expression? What else did you do?
Yes, we did. So we moved from the dialogue, and that led into them sharing dreams with each other also. So starting with questions and answers, leading into sharing dreams, and then we had an experience of experiencing their live imagination. So we went from the dialogue, the conversation, into close your eyes and now find. I did a guided meditation and led them to a place in nature and let them find their own body of water. You know, find yourself somewhere in nature. Leave it really open ended so that it's their own dream that's happening on the spot. Find yourself in nature. Now, as you somehow move through nature, some of them were flying, some of them were walking, find a body of water. Some of them found lakes. Some of them found the seaside. Some of them found rivers. And now, when you get to this body of water, take a look around and look and see if you can find a helper. And it can be an animal, a bird, a sea creature, or anything. You know, what do you see? So they all found something. They all found something, and they said, now this is your friend, and then now what happens next? And then they just, you know, dreamed for a little while, and then we shared that. And what happens is when the kids are sharing their stories, they will build on each other's stories. We had a lot of similar scenes that people had, that the students had, and we even had a couple of mermaids that showed up and lions and various animals, and it really warmed them up to the idea that they can step into their imagination anytime they want. And and then they can dream together in a group. And, you know, sometimes... Nice. When they share a dream, they'll make up dreams on the spot. They won't necessarily night dream.
Right.
And I've had they make them up on the spot. And I've had times where a student would say, "She's making that up. That's not really a dream." And it's curious, you know, at what point did we lose this idea or teach our children that imagination is also dreaming? And so I think that's very important that they are able to have that.
Yes, it's terribly important with children to affirm, to hear the dreams and affirm the power of imagination. It's also important, as you know, for us not to go off, as some adults do, into sort of artificial constructions. I mean, there is the true dream, the authentic dream, which might have survival information. I have very important information. So as we affirm the value of imagination, as you and I both do, we also don't want to miss the message and the truth of the authentic, uninvented dream that sometimes comes spontaneously. And kids, I've noticed, are sometimes carriers of very important information from spontaneous night dreams, which adults need to hear, need to value, need to work with. Now, you're on an island of Bali, and in your suggestions for the imaginative exercises, going to a special place of water, you're building on the fact that you're surrounded by water and everybody's presumably conscious of it. In the dreams and imaginings that were shared, were you conscious of how much the local geography, the landscapes, the mythology, the traditions of the island were playing into the dreams and imaginal adventures of the kids? Was that a major factor?
Yes, absolutely. What I found interesting was that the expat kids had more fantastic dreams of going off into realms in the imaginal that were not as reflective of everyday life. And then a couple of Balinese students at another workshop that I gave were sharing dreams that were very much based on their culture, as far as going to the rice field, seeing grandmother in the rice field, seeing a departed loved one, going fishing with grandfather, this kind of thing.
These are places where they expect to go in order to do certain things, such as talk to the ancestors. There's a traditional geography for these contexts. Is that what you're saying? Go to the rice field to see grandma, fishing to see grandpa?
I think it's more that it's a blending of what they're actually doing in their waking lives. You know, they're working in the rice fields, perhaps, and they're going fishing, and so it was very a literal kind of a dream that I found was being shared, as opposed to some of the expat kids who were having, you know, dreaming of fairies and going off into forests and things that they're not really seeing in their everyday life. And this is just as far as the dreams that they were sharing. And there's also, you know, sometimes there's a communication challenge. Susan's husband, Susiwan, and Susan both speak Indonesian, and Susiwan is Indonesian, so they translated, for me, and so it's possible there was a little something lost in the translation. But then also the expat kids definitely dream of ceremony, ritual, things that they're observing of the Balinese culture there. So yes, they're both showing up, and they're showing up in the spontaneous night dreams as well as the dreams that we're dreaming on the spot.
Right. Did you have to work with scary dreams and nightmares for these kids? Did they ask you about that? Did they seek guidance on how to deal with things that terrify them in the night?
Yep, absolutely. In fact, we moved from the imagination, the guided, imaginary experience into dream theater. We took a little watermelon break, and then we went into dream theater. And we acted out two dreams, and both of those dreams were nightmares. And they were super scary dreams for both of the kids. And the interesting thing was they knew that they were stepping into a real world when they were going to do this dream theater. So the first dream was of a young boy had this dream, and he wanted to share it, but he was also kind of afraid to. You know, he was, I'm not sure, but I want to, but I'm not sure. And so, you know, you just leave it open. You can choose. It's your choice. You can or you don't have to. It's up to you, you know. And then he braved up, as you say. And this was a dream where he saw a man in a dark room, and this man in the dark room was spitting up spiders, and the spiders were coming and attacking him. And it was really a frightening dream. And so what they really loved was the idea that they have the opportunity now to do something with this dream. They don't have to be stuck with this dream that feels icky to them, and they can do something, you know. So it's really important to leave it open for them to decide and not to guide them too much as far as what's going to happen, other than help them be the director. So, you know, the student directed other students to play the various parts. And what was so delightful was, and also what was interesting is he cast one student to play the role of the scary man, but then he changed his mind. He decided he wanted someone else to play the role. And so I think that's important to allow them that opportunity to really feel into what they want to have happen. And there are ways to do that where nobody's feelings are hurt, and we were able to maneuver that. So in this dream theater, we went into the room, and there was the scary man, and he was, you know, spitting up the spiders, and then the students loved playing the spiders. They loved it, and it turned into quite a rambunctious time. And then I said, well, what do you want? I want you to look around. Actually, before I had them go into the nightmare, both nightmares, I asked them to close their eyes and just slowly turn around and look for a helper to go into this dream with them so that they're not going in alone and they have a helper who's going to help them with the scary part. So in this first dream, he found a phoenix. And so when we did the dream theater, he cast somebody as a phoenix. And the part where the dream ended, where the scary spiders were coming at him, then he had the phoenix come, and the phoenix, you know, vanquished the scary guy. And then the spiders all, just on their own, and this was without the dreamer directing it, they put themselves together in the form of a doorway, a new doorway. And they said, this is your new doorway, and you have to go through this. And so they all made it up as they went along, and then the dreamer went through the doorway. And it was absolutely transformative. When I asked this boy, how do you feel after doing this? And he just lit up. He said, awesome. He said, this is awesome. I feel great. I'm going to do this again. So, highly successful.
This is terrific. So, just to be clear, the children playing the spiders decided to become the doorway. That just happened without scripting. They just did it spontaneously. Is that what happened?
Yes, they spontaneously, somebody said, let's make a doorway, and they all came mm-hmm. together and made a doorway.
And they did. So this wasn't the dreamer or you. They came up with this idea in their own group, and so the scary spiders become the doorway. It's quite beautiful. I mean, it's a wonderful example. You and I have both experienced the power of dream theater with people of different ages. It sometimes is a pathway to resolution. Sometimes with actors playing the roles, the dreamer can see a way through that they couldn't find for themselves. Sometimes, without our groups anyway, we have the dreamer interview the players and they speak from the roles they are playing. And very often, as in your version, which is beautiful and brilliant, we go beyond the point of fear or blockage or stuckness to a kind of resolution which moves organically in the theater itself. Now, Jenny, we're going to take a break fairly soon, so let's be sure that people know how to get in contact with you. We're talking with my friend Jane Carlton. She's a dream appraiser. I made up that phrase for her. She's also a jewelry appraiser. She appraises the treasures and dreams in the life of your night dreams and your imagination. And she's a very, very good life coach using these techniques. So maybe if you want personal counseling, you want to get in touch with her. So, Jane, how do people get in touch with you?
Well, the best way is through my website, and my website is yourdreamingself.com. So it's Y-O-U-R, dreaming self, S-E-L-F.com. And,
so there you have it, yourdreamingself.com. Worth getting in touch, particularly if you feel you need to share things privately and get some personal counseling. Jane is really good. And if you come to the Bay Area, San Francisco Bay Area, you'll find her leading groups, and you'll also find her hosting very, very wild, experimental, wonderful workshops for me. We're doing some new ones next year. All right, you're listening to Way of the Dreamer. We'll be back with Jane Carlton after the break.
All positive natural health programs on HRNradio.com.
You're listening to Way of the Dreamer. This is Robert Moss. By the way, I'm about to launch some new online courses with the Shift Network. Some of you are familiar with those.
If you're not, you know, go and check out the Shift Network and go to my website, mossstreams.com, where we'll post details when we have the live links. But we have a bunch of new online courses and, of course, lots of workshops, play shops, and trainings all over the map. My guest, Jane Carlton, is the person who facilitates the play shops and workshops in the Bay Area. There's one coming up in March, which might attract you. Anyway, but we're talking to Jane Carlton. Her website is yourdreamingself.com about her recent experiences of dreaming with children in Bali. And Jane, you were saying during the break that you had some good experiences in drumming and drawing. Talk to us about that.
Thank you. Yes, well, after the Dream Theater, the students all gathered art supplies, drawing supplies, and they were all in a line, and they put themselves in a line instead of a circle, and I drummed for them. I told them, okay, so close your eyes. I'm going to start drumming for you, and see what comes up. See if it's a dream that you've had that you want to draw. See if something new and fresh comes up, but whatever comes up, put something on the paper. And when you're ready, as I'm drumming, go ahead and open your eyes and start drawing, and I'll keep drumming for about 10 minutes or so. So that's what I did, and the students had their eyes closed, oh, just for a few minutes, really, and then they just dove right into drawing. And what was really remarkable was, you know, typically students, kids will fidget a bit, and they'll nudge each other, and they'll do, you know, a lot of movement. They were really, really focused on their drawings. They really stayed with it, loved doing it. And when I finished drumming, some of them weren't quite finished. Some of them drew storyboards, so the scene from one scene to another, which were quite remarkable. And so that was a highly successful experience for them, and it's the first time I've done this where I've drummed for them as they draw, and I found that to be interesting to see the shift in the focus of the drawing during that time. Then afterwards, we shared our drawings, and now it was time. The parents were arriving, time to go home. They were not ready to stop after 3 hours, which is really remarkable. And then when the parents came, it was really important for these kids to show their parents their drawings, to tell them their dreams, to tell them what they experienced. And I really made a point of talking to the parents as much as I could to just say, now do this at home. You know, let them share their dreams with you. Do a family practice. And then I had a workshop for adults the next day at the same location. So that idea where they are so ready to share dreams and taking that time, slowing down just enough for a dream is really important, and it's important to remind parents of that.
Well, I'm glad that you gave the message to the parents. Hopefully they will create a little more space to hear their children's dreams and support them. I've noticed the three essential things to remember if you have access to kids and their dreams in order to support them. And number one, listen up. Let them tell their stories. Don't interfere. Don't interrupt. Don't tell them what it means. Don't dismiss it. Don't interpret or analyze either. Hear the story. Give them some space. Turn off your cell phone. Listen. Number two, give them something to do with the scary stuff. If they're worried or upset, they need an ally. The first ally is you. I mean, hug them. In the context of the workshop, it's great to do the theater or something else. I mean, at home, it might be, you know, holding them, hugging them, suggesting them as a stuffed toy or a toy soldier, getting to their guardian of the night, telling them they can spit out the negative energy or make a picture of it and tear it up as violently as possible. And the third thing is what you are doing throughout this play shop, this wonderful play shop, Jen. You were helping the kids to find a way to creatively express what's coming from the dream, to give it creative expression. And there's so much juice and joy and energy in that. We see it with everybody, actually. We see it also, you and I both, in workshops for adults.
I don't know if you did this in your workshop in Bali, but you know we do it in many other places. We get adults to draw from their dreams. Typically, I just drum for a couple of minutes and then have them draw. But I have done what you did with the kids. I've drummed for longer and said draw, and you feel like it, and the spirit moves you, and that works too. And it's amazing how much comes through. You see, with adults or kids, the scared person who doesn't think they can draw suddenly has something wonderful. And, you know, there's creativity moving. So it all goes to the idea we want to do more dreams and talk about them and analyze them. We want to embody them by letting creative energy, healing, juice from somewhere else play through. So goddess love you for what you've been doing and for what you're doing also in the good old United States in the Bay Area. When you had the adults come in after the kids in Bali, did you do some of the same games with them, or is it completely different?
Oh, absolutely. Yep, we do dream theater and drawing. And, you know, I mean, I've learned very well from you, Robert. So I utilize your techniques always. And, you know, yes, we want to access that inner child that really lived in us and bring back that part of ourselves, and this is a way to do it. You know, I'd like to say one thing about the scary dreams and the scary nightmarish images, and I also have found this working with teens. It's really important to let people know, and let children, let teens know that the images that might come in a nightmare are not our responsibility. As far as I worked with one teen who had a horrible dream of, in her dream she had killed her family. And this is a horrendous thing. And it actually, working with her, one of the most helpful things was to say, you know, you're really not responsible for those images that came to you in this dream. They have a message for you, but this is not something that you are a bad person for having these images. And this is something people don't hear very often, and people really feel responsible for these awful images that can show up.
I have mixed feelings about this, Jane. I know you're working with kids, and it's very important to liberate them from that. But at the same time, I'm thinking, maybe you thought at the time, however you're going to play it, maybe the dream does express the frustration and anger the kid is carrying. Maybe the dream does dramatize feelings that the kid or the adult in a different kind of dream is carrying. I mean, that thought must have occurred to you, didn't it?
Well, sure. You know, and it has more to do with, yes, absolutely, this is a reflection of what's going on inside. But in the case of I worked with a teenager who had this terrible dream and woke up and was self-cutting herself after having this dream and ended up in a hospital. And I was contacted by her mother to work with her. And first of all, I said I won't work with her unless she has a good supportive therapist that she's working with to support the work. But I had one Skype session with her. And that Skype session absolutely transformed her situation. And the first step was, you know, she woke up feeling, how could I do this? How could I want to kill my family? And how could I, you know? And in one part of this dream, it's very graphic, but she cut off the four fingers of her family members and ate it, right? This is a really graphic, awful thing. So she felt terrible, and the way that she could express this energy was to hurt herself. But I said, is it possible that you feel like people are pointing the finger at you and blaming you for things in the family? And that was it. That was the real epiphany for her. And that was the beginning of some.
All right. On that charming note, we have to take another break, Jane, but I have some more things to say about it and around it. We're talking now about dreams that might make the dreamer feel guilty for having apparently done something to hurt other people in the dream. We need to continue this part of the conversation. So we'll be back in a moment with Jane Carlton. You're listening to Way of the Dream with Robert Mouse. We'll be back right after the break.
You're listening to HealthyLife.net, the radio network that brings positive talk with positive change to make your world a little better.
You're listening to Way of the Dreamer with Robert Noss. Our wonderful guest today is Jane Carlton, dream appraiser, dream explorer, dream teacher, and also gemologist and jewelry appraiser. Wonderful matchup, seeking the gems even in scary dreams. She started telling us a rather horrific dream which had really troubled the teen who felt responsible for what she'd done to her family in a sort of almost Texas Chainsaw Massacre kind of dream. And Jane, you were able to lead her through the fearful images of the dream to a place of healing and resolution. Talk to us about how you approach that kind of thing.
Thank you. Yes. Well, the first thing is before you step into a dream that is that's of this nature, you do want to have a helper. So always, 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 I help my clients find someone to help. And it's remarkable what will show up. And so that's the first thing. And so going back inside this dream, she had the opportunity to create a new ending for it. You know, you don't want to leave it like this. And eventually the dream was that there was a Christmas tree. There were packages under the tree. She opened one of the packages, and inside the package was a beautiful baby. And the dream ended with her holding this beautiful baby and really feeling a sense of new birth, new life, new things that can happen in the family. And really changed the energy, took the fear away. The sense of relief that she had was palpable. Once she realized that she wasn't responsible, it allowed her then to move forward and to come to a place of healing.
Well, this is beautiful work. Again, I'm sort of treading lightly around the minefield of responsibility or not, because, as you know, that's probably a good thing to say to a kid. But as you know, I take the view, it's the dreamer's view, that we actually are responsible for what we do and don't do in our dreams. I understand why you had to liberate the teen from the feeling she's responsible from scenes of horror. Let me give you a story from my family life. My youngest daughter, when quite small, she was either pre-K or kindergarten, comes down crying, and the car's about to come to take her off to her preschool situation. I said, "What's the matter, sweetie?" And she says, "Oh, Daddy, I tied Mum to the railroad tracks, and the train's coming, and I feel so guilty, and I feel so bad." And I sat her down. I said, "Is there anything else going on in your dreams last night?" She said, "Oh, yes. There's a jaguar." I said, "How is a jaguar?" "Oh, it was nice. It rubbed itself against me like a kitty." I said, "Let's do this. I'm holding your hand. How about if you go back into your dreams and get the jaguar? Can you do that?" "Yes, yes, yes." "You saw the jaguar? Now, can you take the jaguar and use its teeth and claws to free Mummy from the ropes, free her from the railroad track before the train comes?" And she did. And all is liberated and all is fine. So I skipped the step of saying, "You're not responsible." I think you did the right thing, Jane. There's no criticism to you. On the contrary, I think we just have to liberate each other. But the case of my own daughter, recognizing that her feelings were at work, and her feelings had, in this dream, generated a situation in which something bad is happening to Mommy because she's thinking bad thoughts about Mommy. I found a way to do what you did with your teen. I found a way to help her find an ally available to her from her own dreams, and free Mom from the railroad tracks. It's all terribly important work, and how we come at it is going to vary case by case by case. Mm-hmm. I will say again, with no criticism of what you did with your teen, I take the view, which is strange in our culture perhaps, that we actually are, to a large extent, responsible for what goes on in our dreams. We have the ability to make decisions, make choices, to change the story when we can, but that's too much to lay on somebody, some poor teen who's being crushed and getting and traumatized by things that they're doing in the dream for which they think they're responsible in the negative way that you talked about. So that's an interesting discussion, and there we are.
Excellent point. And every circumstance is unique. And since our main topic is working with kids, I will take a little different approach working with an adult also, you know, and so what's so beautiful about this work is every dream is unique and every circumstance has a way. There's always a way. And what I find is that the dreamer will always come up with their own solution. They'll always come up with a way to help themselves.
But may need assistance to recognize that, because we have so little training and preparation for these things. Well said, Jane.
the beauty of our approach is that, which is our active dreaming approach, is that we recognize, as others do, that there are universal themes playing in dreams, and we see something of ourselves in others, and we recognize recurring themes and challenges of dreams. But at the same time, every experience is unique, every dreamer is unique, and we have to pay respect to the situation, the abilities, the resources available or not available to the individual dreamer. So how we are going to approach an individual case depends entirely upon not only the content of the dream, but the resources available to that dreamer in terms of their own stability, their own ability to cope with things, their own sense of strength or lack of it. And when you're dealing with a crisis situation, as you have, the first thing to do is to, you know, step up as ally and minimize that crisis and as you seek the way through. And it sounds as if you've been doing that beautifully. All right, anything more you want to tell us about your work in Bali? Because in the last segment, where the time is zipping by, we are going to go to a different aspect of dreaming with children. We're going to talk about dreaming with the inner child, sometimes the lost boy or girl of our own selves and our own lives. So anything more for us from what you've learned playing and working with kids with dreams in Bali?
You know, I think we covered this really well, and I do have a quick, interesting Balinese dream story. Would you like to hear it?
Yes, please.
It's okay. So when I go to Bali, I always introduce myself to my Balinese friends and Balinese people I meet as a dream teacher, and I do my own independent research and collect stories. So I'm in a taxi with a taxi driver, and I tell him, and they always ask you, what do you do? And I said, I'm a dream teacher. And he says, oh, I have to tell you this dream. And the dream is that his wife dreamed that his father came to see her in a dream about 2 years after he had died. And he told her the name of a man, Mr. S, we'll call him, name of a man that he had borrowed money from years before, and he had not paid him back. And this man was his old friend. And he wanted her to find this man and to apologize for him and to pay the loan if possible. So he and his wife went to talk to his mother and asked his mother about this. And she says, oh, yes, Mr. F was your father's very good friend. And, yes, he did borrow money from him. And he used to live in New Kuning, which is a little village next to Ubud. And so they decided to see if they could find him. So they found him, and they went to talk to him. And yes, indeed, he had borrowed the money. They said they told him about the dream. They said, you know, our father wants us to pay this loan back to you. And the man said, no, don't go to the temple, make an offering to your father, talk to him, tell him all is forgiven, wish him good luck, and good karma for his path to nirvana.
Mm. And, what a beautiful story.
Isn't that a great story?
Absolutely beautiful. Beautiful visit from the departed, doing something the departed liked to do, and what a charming and generous a response from the man who was offered the repayment of the loan. We're talking to Jane Carlton, wonderful dream teacher, dream coach, dream appraiser. We'll be back for our final segment after the break. You're listening to Way of the Dreamer with Robert Mark.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
You are listening to Way of the Dreamer. This is Robert Moss. Our wonderful guest today is Jane Carlton, dream appraiser, jewelry appraiser, teacher of active dreaming. She's a wonderful coach of these things. If you're looking for private counseling, look for Jane, yourdreamingself.com. She does Skype consultations and so on. I can't do this kind of stuff myself anymore, so don't seek me. But if you're seeking someone who is fully versed in the active dreaming techniques and interprets them in a both gentle and original and creative way, look for Jane. Jane, I want to tell you a story about a theme that you and I are both fascinated by, which is our ability to go back to a younger version of ourselves and do some good by talking across time in the mind of that younger self. I'll tell the story just as it unfolded and just as the revelation became clear in phases to the experiencer. So, wonderful woman, also one of our dream teachers, was at my training for my psychobomb training for guided souls last week, told me this. She said that many years ago, when she was very depressed, she went into her bathroom determined to kill herself. She'd figured out how to do it, and she's there in front of the mirror getting ready to kill herself according to plan. And a voice walks through her mind and says something like, you cannot escape yourself. There's no escape from yourself. The voice is firm and clear. And it hits her like a blow. And she realizes, that's right. If I try to check out of this body and this awful situation in my life, I'll still have to face the issues in some way, somewhere else. So this deep voice is moving through her mind. And she doesn't kill herself with it. Then as she told the story, years later, in one of my workshops, she's inspired to journey back to her younger self. I think that was the exercise. We've done it together. I'm asking people to go back to their younger self and practice transtemporal healing. In other words, try to speak mind to mind in the now time of the younger self and be the protector, the mentor, the counselor that younger self desperately needed but might have lacked. She finds herself saying the same words to her younger self, remembering the suicidal episode. She's saying, you can't escape yourself. There's no escape from yourself. And then she realizes that the two things are matching up. She thinks there's a time loop. I'm saying this to my younger self now. She heard it in her own time. What if what I'm doing right now in Robert's workshop is creating the situation that prevents me from killing myself years earlier? You and I think this is possible. She thinks it's possible. I know this, whatever we think is possible or not, I know that we can gain greatly in healing for ourselves and maybe for the younger self by practicing going back to the younger self or the child in our life, in our own lives, and trying to do that, be the mentor, the counselor, the one who can always say, you know, you'll make it through, you'll survive, or in this case, you cannot escape yourself. What do you think of that?
Oh, I love that story. That is fantastic. And I remember the time that we journeyed back to my younger self at Mosswood Hollow, and during a time I was in a fire and rescued my 14-year-old self. And I believe that I healed in a miraculous way from second and third degree burns, thanks to the group traveling back in time to give healing love to my 14-year-old self. It's remarkable, really. Times like this have changed my life. I love this story.
I remember your story vividly. It's a beautiful one also. Is that available somewhere where people can read it? Is it your website or something like that?
You know, it was on your website, but it isn't anymore.
Well, we'll have to resurrect it.
It was
Fire Leopard is Waiting for Me, or the title, something like that. It was a story of Jane, whom we're talking right now, traveling back during a drumming shamanic journey, one of my workshops, back to a 14-year-old self who was very seriously burnt in a kitchen fire. I'm there on the cusp of womanhood, girl becoming a woman. She's seriously burnt over much of her body, and yet something sustained her and brought her through. And Jane came to think that it was her older self traveling back to the younger self and providing the mentorship and encouragement the younger self needed. I believe this is possible because I don't think I would be on the planet myself had not a man who looked like a big pink-faced man with a lot of white hair sat on my bedside, invisible to others when I was a sick, lonely boy, and said things like, Robert, you're lonely, I know, you're not feeling good, but you're going to make it through, you'll survive, you're lonely, but you'll know the love of women and they will love you, you can't talk about your dreams, but the day will come when many people all over the world are clamoring to hear your dreams. And I believe now that older man with the white hair and the pink face was my older self, younger than I now am, going back shamanically, going back to that lonely, sad kid, sick kid in Australia, and giving him courage and resources to go through. Hey, what have we got to lose by trying this kind of thing, by imagining that we can go back to a younger self and give them counsel and encouragement, or if necessary, some course correction? Maybe they need some course correction. My younger self in his 20s desperately needed some course correction. He thought he knew so much, he needed to be pulled back, and I tried to do that with him. So that's another aspect of dreaming with children, dreaming with our younger self. And yet a further aspect, very familiar to some of you listening, is the phenomenon of soul loss and then the possibility of soul recovery. I haven't met a human being in this world, in my life, who hasn't lost at some point some vital part of their own energy and identity, call it soul, because the world seems so cold or so cruel. You've known this moment, haven't you? I've known it. Jane's known it. we really don't want to be where we are, so part of us checks out. It might be survival mechanism. So we lose a vital piece of ourselves, and shamans call this soul loss. So dreaming with the children can also be dreaming our way to reclaim those parts of our vital energy and identity that went missing. This becomes soul recovery when we support each other in doing it. It's soul retrieval when the shaman does it for you and blows something back into your body. But the beauty of our active dreaming approach is that we help each other to become shamans of our own souls and healers of our own lives, and not forever give over authority or control of these things to other people. And that's something that you do, Jane. As you go about your world, you're an ambassador for the dreaming, you are a healer, and you're helping people to develop their own resources. And above all, maybe you're helping people to see the glitter of the jewels, the authentic jewels in their own dreams, and recognize what is the real and what is just fake costume jewelry.
Yes, absolutely. And
so I made you a dream appraiser. Do you like that phrase?
I love that. I'm going to have to put that
I've never heard it used. I think I invented it for you. Take it and play with it and let it twinkle bright. And dream appraiser and jewelry appraiser, I mean, it's a pretty good combination. All right, we're talking to Jane Carlton. Her website is yourdreamingself.com. We'll be back basically to say thank you, happy holidays, and sweet dreams after the break. You're listening to Way of the Dreamer with Robert Knopf.
Lighting the way with positive energy and love, hrnradio.com.
You've been listening to Way of the Dreamer. This is Robert Knopf. Our excellent guest today is Jane Carlton. YourDreamingSelf.com is her website. My website, of course, is NopfDreams.com. Do go over. We've just posted my schedule of play shops, workshops, trainings for the year ahead. A lot going on all over the map. And do look for my new courses for the Shift Network. There'll be many of them, starting in January with Active Dreaming, the Essential Training, a 12-week course laying out the core techniques of my original synthesis of shamanism and dream work. Thank you so much, Jane, for all you've shared with us. Happy holidays. Is there any last thought you'd like to leave with our listeners?
Oh, I'd like to thank you, Robert, and I'd like to say that I believe the very best dreams, the very best gems are our dreams. Happy holidays.
The very best gems are dreams. Lovely. Our dream of praise is Jane Carlton. Well, dream well over the holidays. Dream well into the new year. Bring through some good intentions. And it's a good time of year as we approach the end of it to dream into the year ahead. So remember to set an intention for guidance and inspiration for the coming year as we approach New Year's. That would be a good thing, good way to see in the new year. So from now into the new year, may your best dreams come true and may you remember them.